Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Meanwhile, in Seattle, a protester is recovering from a gunshot wound after yesterday's protest in Capitol Hill turned violent. Last night, a man drove a car towards a crowd of protesters at 11th and Pike, as you see in this video. And as soon as the car stopped, protesters surrounded the vehicle. It appears a man reached into the driver's side window. The driver got out, shot someone, and walked through the crowd, waving a gun. Sebastian Robertson picking up this part of the story about the arrest and what we're learning about the suspect. Sebastian?
Well, that suspect, by all accounts, turned himself into police after that run-in where he allegedly ended up shooting a protester. The protesters, meanwhile, taking steps to protect themselves. You can see that barricade that they've set up with cars and bicycles. That's about a block away from 11th and Pine. And as we can see this way, the protest beginning to disperse a little bit as those barricades are lifted. All this happening while that protester recovers in the hospital.
Captured on video and posted to social media, this video, shot just this last week, shows Daniel Gregory speaking out against police brutality.
I can have my hands up and they still can shoot.
That's what brought the 27-year-old to Sunday's protest on Capitol Hill. More on him in a moment. Hundreds gathered Sunday night for the 10th straight day of protests. Just after 8:30, multiple cameras capture a black sedan quickly heading down 11th Street, stopping just before hitting protesters.
It was going to run over the crowd, and the young black gentleman who so bravely stepped up to take on the car, reached in through the window to try to prevent the car from running over the entire crowd.
That driver, later identified as Nicholas Fernandez, was armed, shooting and injuring Daniel Gregory, who's seen here approaching the driver's side window. We pause the video before Gregory is shot. Moments later, Fernandez is spotted, this time from a different angle, pistol in his hand, walking toward the police line, where witnesses say he turned himself in. Meanwhile, Gregory received medical attention by volunteer medics, ultimately walking away.
I hear the gunshot go off in my arm. I moved right in time when he reached for something. I moved right, but my whole thing was to protect those people. And the whole thing was to protect those people down there.
This picture posted to Instagram by Gregory's brother shows Daniel recovering in a Seattle hospital room. Close friends say he's in good spirits, as expected to recover.
Fernandez is held on one count of assault. His bail set today at $200,000. In Capitol Hill, Sebastian Robertson, King 5 News.
I'm so glad he's going to recover. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, we have seen protests from all around the world with a common theme, justice and equality.
And Joy, it's important to recognize that racism is more than just a police issue. It is part of our American history. It's ingrained in America's social and economic fabric. According to the Associated Press, African Americans still earn barely 60 cents for every $1 in white income. When it comes to wealth, African Americans only have 10 cents for every $1 whites own. And African Americans remain more than twice as likely to live in poverty. What about progress? Well, African Americans are about as likely to own a home now as they were when Richard Nixon was president. And just recently, we have seen minorities are disproportionately affected by COVID-19, as well as the economic downturn we've seen.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Whew. Lots of clowning to report, have serious information, but wow, lots of clowning this week. One, I just was posting on social media letting folks know about the broadcast for this evening. Wasn't planned way ahead of time, just, you know, kind of decided to do this yesterday. But I looked at social media before we went live, and Whitney Houston was trending, and I almost took the page from Dr. Africa's Nutritional Destruction of Black People and said, do you know you all are posting about and showing love and appreciation for this black female victim of racism who's been dead for almost a decade? Do you know she is a nutritional Uncle Tom? Woo, I'm so glad we are going to be done. I'm doing the watermelon dance all this week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Anyway, so that was one. Lots of clowning. This week, nobody has clowned harder than racist man, racist woman, racist child. We have lots to get to. Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy, what racism, white supremacy is, how it works, what it means to be white. Today's date, Tuesday, June 9, 2020, so I have been told. Lots of clowning. So they had kente cloth, Nancy Pelosi and Congressman Schumer, and Congressman Clyburn. He's in South Carolina, black male. But Nancy Pelosi, I think it's Senator, I said Congressman, Senator Schumer, these folks are white. It was a lot of white people, and not only, they didn't just do the kente cloth at the U.S. Capitol building yesterday. No. They did the kente cloth coordinated, and they did the Colin Kaepernick kneel. It might have been the officer who killed Gregory Lloyd, because that's the same kind of position. So I don't know. Sometimes they trick you with these symbols. I don't know. But so they did the knee with the kente cloth, and they were COVID-19 socially distanced. Clowning, tacky, and being safe all at the same time. And they got a lot of photo ops, like they did some with low light, like it's kind of somber. They did some with bright spotlight on it, standing with their chest out and kente cloth proud. Woo! I have never seen white people clown so hard. Mitt Romney was at one of the protests yesterday. Now, I did not see his kente cloth, but I did see Mitt Romney. He was out and strong representing for the Negros of North America. Lots of clowning this week. Last tidbit before we get to the meat of what this broadcast is supposed to be about. Last week, speaking of kente cloth and symbols, last week they began in many cities in the United States, they began attacking, vandalizing, destroying monuments to a variety of Confederate soldiers. I am not aware. Now, there are a number of monuments and statues to racists who were not Confederate soldiers. You got the J. Edgar Hoovering. I didn't hear anybody say that they were going to the J. Edgar Hoover building in D.C. and saying, hey, this here fella, you know, concocted this COINTELPRO program and harassed Dr. King and very people that we're quoting right now, and Assata Shakur and Dr. Huey P. Newton, man, J. Edgar Hoover building no more. Change. I haven't heard anything like that. I mean, that's why I said it's a lot of statues throughout the system. Anyway, sometime in the middle of last week, they started attacking Confederate statues in, like, Louisiana and lots of different. This is throughout the world now. I said in the U.S., but throughout the world now. They went and grabbed a slave trader statue over in the UK and threw it in the water. So this has been widespread. I said last week that this strikes me as illogical, which is generally my conclusion for all of the rioting. And again, I do not use any of those cute terms that people coin: urban unrest, Negro rebellion, rioting. What is it? My other favorite, it's a little longer, unruly street activity. That's the other one. Anyway, so the unruly street activity, which resulted in these statues coming down, they had this is happening in the middle of last week, and the same thing happened with Dylan Storm Roof. If folks remember, he went and shot up the church 2015, and then they thought, oh, we got to get these Confederate statues down. What? They went and gave him a hamburger and then started taking Confederate statues down. Anyway, I said this just strikes me as really illogical, along with all of the unruly street activity, to be out here plundering these statues. Sometimes they, you know, you take them down, they put them back up. Sometimes the same day. Just doesn't make any sense. You got live racists, number one. It's lots of things that could be done that would be better than this. This is not solving any of our problems. They did all that. Remember, they scaled the flagpole in 2015. This Confederate flag's coming down, yeah. Did all that after they gave Dylan Roof a hamburger. Then they went and took the Confederate flag down. Sometimes they put it back up. Sometimes they kept it down. Sometimes they had to do a lot of hand-wringing about it. I mean, nonsense it all is. Not logical. It is not about solving the problem. I wrote about this at Atlanta Black Star at the time. Anyway, so I posted all this on my Facebook page last week. You know, a nice tidy summation of what I just said. Nonsense, not logical. What are we doing? Follow logic. So some, I guess, listeners, or at least folks who write on the Facebook page follow, they wrote back and questioned why I would say such a thing, you know. And one person, I'll read exactly what he said. He said, or the person who responded, I'll put it that way because I don't know these folks. The person, he wrote, let's see if the page will get here. There we go. Uncle Dokles. So he wrote in, how is it illogical to focus one's rebellious unrest, that's another cute one, rebellious unrest, unruly street activity, on a symbol of white supremacy? The next person wrote, they should be burning every statue of a white supremacist leader. Now, I did give a response last week, but as opposed to continuing all that from this week, I just remembered those specific sentences and the question. And then I looked at the news from today. Richmond, Virginia judge blocks the state's removal of Robert E. Lee statue. That is a solid answer to the question of why it's illogical to focus one's rebellious unrest on a symbol of white supremacy. Sometimes they put it back up the day you take it down. Sometimes they wait a week and a more powerful white person comes in and says, oh, no, that's not going to be allowed. We're going to have to put that back. Sorry. And they had actually said this in Louisiana and some other areas because some white people, these statues are important. They're kind of big in some places, kind of expensive. They have laws that say you cannot remove these statues without getting a vote from state Congress or the governor. Like, I mean, sometimes it's really elaborate, the process. Like, it can't just be, you know, we're tired of looking at old Robert here. Lee, you're coming down today. You and your horsey. How about it? You might have to go and get permission from someone who is probably going to be a powerful white person. And they said that in Louisiana because I think it was a black person, a black mayor or something, low-level figure, and they removed a statue, and they said, now, he could be sued because you got to have, I think it's like the governor's permission or someone in authority in Louisiana. You can't just go taking these things down. They said he could be sued for doing this. Have to see how it goes. But following logic, very important. That is a theme for the day, a theme for until we replace white supremacy with justice and beyond. Follow logic. Anyway, so we would not have done a program today if I had not been downtown yesterday. Downtown Seattle, Washington. I've been in Seattle for the whole time that the Cows has been in existence. I've actually been here longer, but just for the Cows program purposes, I've been here the entire time. I've said for years, unambiguously, without reservation, best plantation in the States, in North America, easily, best plantation. I said that for a long time. Bragged about all the wonderful amenities and cool things to do here in the Seattle area. Absolutely. Even them taking it serious about the Rona, right? We could have been in other locations, Georgia and some of the other states where they've not taken this seriously and, you know, whatever, you all get out and do what you want to. There's no Rona, you know, go have fun, go get a tattoo and all that good stuff. Not here, taking it serious. So, I go downtown yesterday and I live maybe not that far, 10 minute drive. Well, depending on traffic. I live about 10 minutes. 10 minute drive from downtown, and I do not particularly hang out downtown. It is not my favorite area. That's like a touristy area. When they show video or images of Seattle, I think one of the more popular ones is Pike Place Market. That's where they do the fish tossing and all that. You can catch it. So that's right in the middle of downtown. That's like First and Pike and Pond right there. Really famous portion of the downtown area. Not my... I don't hang out at the Pike Place Market. They have, you know, bars and restaurants and other things down there, malls and all that. I do not go downtown to hang out or anything. It's, you know, passing through to get this place, passing through to get this place. It's kind of central, so that's about it. That's why I was there yesterday, passing through, on my way to someplace else. But I don't hang out down there. I had been downtown, I think the last time was at the beginning, probably two weeks ago. It was the last time I was downtown. And at that, and so we're talking like the end of May. At that time, the Rona restrictions were still very heavy here. We were under state lockdown. It still have a lot of restrictions and things. But we were still under government lockdown, which had been in place for about 2 months at that point. So most of the things downtown had been closed for about 2 months. Most of, like the market that I just mentioned, Pike Place Market, and lots of the big shops and the mall and all that stuff. That's why when the people had called in before in Atlanta and said, you know, they had a shootout at the mall, I said, what are you talking about? The mall has been closed here for, you know, a long time. March. So the last few times I'd been downtown, it had just been kind of eerie, you know. The first couple times, like back in March, it was just like, wow, to be in the middle of, you know, the city, and it's pin drop quiet, no cars, no people, no drunk white people, like, wow, this is crazy. So that's what it was still like the last time, 2 weeks ago when I was there. So this was the first time that I had been downtown since all the protests and what have you started about 2 weeks ago. I think here in Seattle about really in earnest hard about 10, 11 days ago. So I get downtown and I'd been watching, you know, the newspaper reports and all of that. I, you know, was not ignorant, but wow. Like I was at 3rd and Pike. 3rd and Union, 3rd and Pike, right in the major area, about two blocks from Pike Place Market. And I looked, and it was just like everything was boarded up. And I mean high, like from the ground way high to the ceiling, like super boarded up. Lots of things were closed. It was confusing as to whether they were closed because of the Rona. Are they closed because of the protesting? Is it a combination of both? I think one of the first things that I saw, they had a jewelry store, and you know they have the gates, right, that you pull down over a shop storefront. So the gate had not been lifted. The gate was still down. The gate had literally been ripped open, like a hole had been ripped into the gate, right? Like if you have seen any of the like superhero type programs or movies, when they have like some fictitious white person, Superman, Batman, whoever it is, he's really strong, Wolverine, and there's like a cage or a cell, and he rips the bars apart and, you know, dash it. That's what it looked like. That, when I saw that, I was just like, what? If I had really been in journalist mode, I would have taken a photograph. I was not going as a spectator or a journalist, like, ooh, let me, you know, check out rioting, protest. I was going, ooh, I'm going and hoping the farmer's market will be open soon, get my strawberries, get my Vitamix on. That's all I'm doing, getting my errands done and enjoying the coolness. And it's like, what is going on? Like I said, it was ripped open. The gate to the jewelry store, totally looted, like glass debris is everywhere. Like, I paused because I said, now, okay. Throwing a brick or what have you, breaking glass, yeah. Okay. You need equipment to rip apart that sort of metal, thick metal fence. Like, that is not something that, hey, you know, it's 20 of us or 100 of us and we're going to get together and pull hard and come on, heave. No, you need equipment to do this. That was what gave me extraordinary pause as to, wow, I am not prepared for what is happening here at all. How in the world is equipment to do this being brought in to loot a jewelry store in the middle of a major city? And this is just like allowed? Like, what? No big deal. The police, whatever. Like, yeah, we're getting down. Like, wow. It was totally stunning to see that. This was not like a CVS looting and that sort of thing. Like, machinery. We were prepared to come in and strike the jewelry store. White people. That's what I mean. Like, I've never seen a riot where black people had machinery to come in and go loot like a K Jewelers. Like, did that happen in Ferguson? I missed it. I thought they were talking about the Quick Trip. Did I miss that? Did they have, like at some of the others back in 92, did they have that in L.A.? They went out to Simi Valley and they had equipment to loot like banks and jewelry stores. Did they have that? I might be really misinformed. That was when immediately, like, okay, everything about this is, I do not feel safe. If this sort of thing is going down, I don't want to be here at all. If white people, and I have to put the emphasis on that, I don't know what they're doing in your area. Maybe they got rebellious unrest with a lot of black people in your area. Here, it's a lot of white people involved in this. And to have that sort of machinery on hand, was this planned? Like, who has machinery on hand to destroy metal grating that you can just, at the drop of a, oh, we're protesting a shot nigger? Let me get my winches and, what? Immediately, I am terrified. I have never. Well, let me do it. So, Gus T, even in my tubby days, before I was doing yoga and eating correctly, been over 200 pounds basically since I was 14 years old. I'm over 6 foot two. The people who see me at the retreats and what have you, I'm not a tiny person. Not that I'm a tough guy. I'm a victim of racism. Like, you could get a white 10-year-old, and that would probably be enough to shut old Gus T down. So I'm just giving you that for additional info. But I'm generally not, like, fearful when I go out and about. I have traveled a lot. I've traveled outside of the country by myself. I have visited a lot of major cities, New York City, Philadelphia, Chicago, many of these places by myself. I have been out and about. I generally travel. I'm not saying I've never been to a city or an area where I, you know, didn't feel some anxiety, some fear about what was happening. Chicago is one. Man, woo! No street lights on that. But anyway, Seattle is not one of those places where I generally walk around like, oh my God, I'm going to die or be mugged or something bad is going to happen. Other than normal white supremacy, like trying to go to my mailbox, that type of thing. Brushing my teeth outside, like basic white supremacy type things, yes, but I would expect that anywhere. But it's not a place where I would think, like, a lot of crime is going to happen to me or I'm at risk or in danger of being out. The only, you know, real exceptions would be, ironically, downtown. Generally late in the evening, man, I tell, that is like one of the only spots I can think of in the Seattle area when, even if it's no rioting, if it's no protesting, it's just an ordinary day. You know, it's August 17th, 2000, 7, you know, nothing special happening, no marches or anything like that. Even then, I would say if it's 11 o'clock, 3rd and Pike, run. Get out of there immediately. Like, it's lots of transients and white transients and white drug dealers and white drug users and enforcement officers, and man, like, get out of there. Like, that is probably that and the Ave, which is further north a little bit from the downtown area. That's where the University of Washington is, the Seattle campus. Spent a lot of time. That's birthplace of the cows. But that Ave, for a lot of the same reasons, lots of enforcement officials, lots of transients, drug users, drug sellers, and they have the added element because the Ave, as it's known, is literally like 2 blocks from the University of Washington campus, which is enormous, it's about 50,000 student body. So you have lots of drunk, intoxicated young whites added to the mix, with that population from the campus added to all that. So, and it's lots of bars. I think it's a much smaller area than downtown, but there are lots of bars concentrated there. So that's another area that I'd say, yeah, you probably don't want to be there late at night, Thursday through Sunday. Could be trouble for a variety of reasons. So all of that said, I'm generally not a fearful person walking out and about in Seattle day or night. This was broad daylight in the morning on a Monday, and I felt immediately like I need to get the hell out of here, like, as soon as possible. And there was no protest. There was no march. It was just lots and lots and lots of evidence of what had been happening for the past days and had continued. And this was the day after the audio clip we started with the black male being shot. This was the day after that had happened. I continue with my sojourn, and it's just more of the same. As you walk from downtown, you're walking west away from downtown, and so I was downtown. The jewelry store was expertly looted at like 3rd and Union, 3rd and Pike. If you're walking west away from the water and the downtown area up to Capitol Hill, so now you'd be at like Pike and 11. That's where the shooting took place. It was more of the same. I got there, they started to have streets blocked off, and Seattle, I said before, the white people here, they'll protest for anything. I've said that. They'll protest gay rights, abused turtles, Donald Trump, anything. What, immigrants? Anything you can think of. Let's protest. Let's do it. I told you, you can watch Battle for Seattle. WTO, Norm Stamper talked about that a little bit. He was chief of police when that happened. They make movies about, you know, the legendary riots in Seattle for all kinds of things. So they are so professional, they have like bins set up of like water and snacks for the protesters. Like, you can get water and face wipes and all of that for the people that are out and doing all of this. Like, very professionally done. I continue walking. As I said, the whole time I'm just walking and looking all of the, it looks like a war zone. That's the total feeling that I had. Like, this totally looks like a war zone. It looks like anything could happen. The increased police presence, you got, there were, even though it was not a protest happening, there were protesters out. They were just small in number. It's early morning. I guess they do the vampire thing. You sleep in the daytime or go to work in the daytime or whatever you do, and then you come out later in the day and do all your, you know, justice, no peace, blah, blah, blah. So there were a few scattered protesters here and there. And I can only tell you, as a victim of white supremacy, as Gus T. Renegade, who has been talking about white supremacy on this broadcast for 11 years, to walk and see white people out with their signs, proud, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter, and they had a sound system. Like, you could look on the map. So, like, once you get to Broadway and around the area where that shooting happened, there's a park, Cal Anderson Park. Big park, very popular, right in the middle of the city. Lots of people come there, well, normally this time of year. I was at this park, and I talked about it on the program, just talking about the Rona this year. I talked about being there, I think, in early May. It was one of the hottest days of the year so far. It was close to 80. It was super crowded. They were doing tag team wrestling. It was like there was no Rona. I went back like 2 weeks later, totally changed. They had tons of signs up, crowded park, closed park, lots fewer people. They weren't doing all that, you know, grappling and tag team wrestling and all the rest of it. It looked like they were taking things serious. This time, and again, all this was like within the last 20 days. this time, emptied out park, one or two people, but they were all on the perimeter. It looked like the park probably is some sort of congregating area in the evenings or what have you. They were on the perimeter, but they had like a sound system set up. They're playing reggae music. White people seem to be the ones DJing and milling around, Black Lives Matter signs. All of this, incidentally, is like a block from the downtown Seattle Police Department station, where the park is and where they've got the loudspeakers and all this. They've got more water set up. They've got signs. I cannot tell you, like, the jewelry store, that was the first, like, oh my, like, if this much is happening, I'm in danger. I need to get the hell out of here as soon as possible. Next, as I continued and the war zone and all this, like, oh wow, this is really bad. I don't want to be around this at all. I don't see any constructive value to any of this. And Seattle Police Department is already Ferguson style under consent decree for the exact same reason. Been that way for years, I think almost a decade, that they've had a consent decree into place. And they've, you know, been back and forth. We talked to Norm Stamp about that. So it's been a while for the exact same reasons, mistreating non-white people. Anyway. So I continue walking. I already told you I'm, you know, stressed. It's anxious. It feels super unsafe. Me as a black person, you've got these fake, suspect, racist protest, white protesters out with their signs. To see, it was something that bothered me anyway, to see more Black Lives Matter signs in Seattle than I would see black people often. But particularly in this context, because now they're everywhere. Like, they have tagged Black Lives Matter all over downtown. They wrote it on the plyboard that they used to cover the windows. Even to me, I found it more sickening. They have pictures of dead black people plastered everywhere. That, like, literally took my breath away. I started going by and I was just seeing more and more pictures of dead black people. Like, what the, in a city where you don't have very many black people. They've written news reports, the Seattle Times, after report after report. Oh man, the Central District, affectionately known as the Colored District. Oh man, gentrification. Oh man, the niggers aren't here anymore. Oh man, priced out of Seattle, the Emerald City, as they call it. We only got Russell Wilson and that coon Gusty Renegade trying to get rid of him. How is it black people not here, but we got all these Black Lives Matter signs held by white people mostly? Come on, yes, we care about the nigger. And then to take the time to paint Sandra Bland, Breonna Banks, George Floyd, like, detailed, put their faces up, and it was totally sickening, macabre, necrophilia again, painting pictures of dead black people throughout a city known for being super white. How is that solving any problems? What are we doing tangibly for black people? Again, and particularly seeing all this, Gusty Renegade, Seattle resident who has been talking about white supremacy, racism, the entire time he has been here, basically. That actually added to my sense of anxiety that, oh my lord, they might see me and immediately think, oh, that nigger Gus is here, he's part of the protest, get him, he's probably here to throw the bricks. Like, I've been saying for years, do not participate in riots. Would not dream. Had I known it was this crazy, I would have tried to alter my route to even avoid being, you know, anywhere close to all of this, but I was able to get my errands and make an effort to get out as quickly as possible. It was absolutely jarring. I would not recommend any black people be in an environment where you being in a system of white supremacy racism is already dangerous. Should have a baseline understanding of that. If you are a non-white person, especially if you are a black person, when you are in environments where anything could happen, jewelry store could be professionally burglarized and looted with equipment in the next 5 seconds. Police might come out, tear gas, car might drive through a crowd with a gun, even with that report. I said, man, I've been saying for weeks, like, man, you got a lot of white people who've been bragging about having bought their new firearms. Lots of them. Boogaloo, they say. Being prepared, you're not going to steal my toilet paper. Now with all of this, Washington State, I don't know where you live, Washington State is open carry. They brag about Starbucks and guns. Got lots and lots of license plates with Starbucks and guns. Matter of fact, I remember 2000, it was after one of those shootings, I think it was 2015, it was right after one of those major shootings, I remember it was a white guy standing outside, he had a huge sign, big pickup truck, all about Second Amendment rights. I support gun rights, make sure we get it in, I don't care how many people get shot up and killed, gun rights. Great equalizer, the grandsister, she said. But it's open carry, so I mean, I said with the incident at the mailbox, didn't I just talk about that last month? I said, I think this white fella was probably armed. He was looking for a confrontation. He was not looking to solve a problem or to introduce himself. He wanted a confrontation with a coon. I would think you got the upper hand. You're not looking to have a, let me repeat that. I am over 6'2". I've been 200 pounds since about I was 14, and I'm in shape now. I do not think he was coming up just, oh yeah, I'm going to take this coon down. I think it was, I'm armed. Let's ride. Be another dead. It'll be another George Floyd hashtag. And this coon won't get a hashtag because he's not even liked. So one less coon to worry about. What happened with that protester at 11th? I think that was 11th and Pine. All that's Capitol Hill, same area in Seattle. This is a black male. Car drives down and he runs over to the vehicle to stop. He said in the audio clip he wanted to keep the protesters safe. Oh my lord. A black male in a system of white supremacy. I saw the video. It looked like a lot of white people, which it would have to be. This is Seattle. I wanted to keep the people safe and got shot in the process of doing it. Could have been killed. I see a total lack of logic. One, I see a total lack of safety. That sort of environment where you could be killed at a moment's notice. I said, the only people I'm aware of who've been killed in any of these unruly street activity have been black people. That's what we were supposed to be stopping in the first place. That's one of the reasons, among many, Mr. Fuller says, do not participate in so-called riots. People get hurt. Non-white people in particular get hurt who should not be hurt. Now, if it was, we're going to go out and do this, and if even if I die, this is going to permanently solve the problem. We will never have another George Floyd again. We'll never have another Breonna Taylor again. Never. Done. This time, no more need to protest, no more hashtags. This is done. Now, if that was going to be the type of proposition, totally different. That's not what this is. This is going to be, we went out and did all this running around in the street, and it looks like we'll probably have to do this again sometime soon. I suspect before the year is over, there'll probably be another one of those police shootings. Just in the U.S., because, I mean, they do this all the time in Brazil and lots of places around the globe. So, I mean, if we just want to talk about the U.S., oh, yeah, keep your protest signs, your tear gas wash, and all the rest of it handy, because this is the system of white supremacy which requires, necessitates, killing black people in large numbers. But yeah, I feel like racists, they do a very good job at promoting, encouraging this sort of behavior, particularly when it's not associated with logic. Like running to the, it's not even a thought process. Like, what if this fella has a gun? What if this fella is well trained with a gun? What if this is an enforcement official? What if this is Chris Kyle, American Sniper? Do I have a vest? I'm out here. I got my Rona mask. I don't even know if he had a Rona mask on. The thing, I have to look at it again. He might not. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, what? They had a different video. This was from last week where a different, and this wasn't a vehicle. This was an 18-wheeler drove into a crowd of protesters and looked like he might have hit a person or two. Same thing. They went, grabbed him out of the car. And I thought that last week. Like, what if he had a firearm? He could have came there and just pow, pow, pow. I mean, thinking and like not thinking. I think there's a lot of that. People end up getting in these groups. White people are to blame. You got Nancy Pelosi and them out with kente cloth flagging all this on. Mitt Romney was at the protest yesterday. White people are most to blame. Crystal Tyler and the like. White people are most to blame. But it just, it encourages. They will encourage. I've said that for years. White people, they are all right with rioting. They know how to handle that. It seems they have even evolved. Sometimes they'll join the riot. Participate in it. Yes, we'll come loot the jewelry store. Been eyeing that bracelet for a while now. They will come and participate sometimes. Mitt Romney was out there yesterday. Sometimes they'll come and join you. we know this is not logical. This is not going to upend our system at all. And it's encouraging irrational thinking about how to go about solving this problem. Irrational thinking. So when that 18-wheeler last week, when it drove into the crowd, you can see that some of the folks, protesters there, they did go run into the cab of the truck. Other folks ran and jumped on top of the 18-wheeler, like from behind. Just trying to follow logic. Now, if you scurry and jump on top of the truck, let's say the driver doesn't get snatched out of the vehicle and slams on the accelerator. Whoa. How's he going to know I'm on top of the truck? How am I going to get down? What if he decides to drive without stopping for another 10 hours? 30 minutes? What if it... Logic. Ain't no logic in the streets. Another one I thought of a number of times watching all of this. If we have been encouraged to follow logic, ain't no logic in the streets. None that I've seen thus far. Some evidence of that is that we keep having to go back out and do it again and again and again. If there was something effective and logical, then this would be a one-time thing, not a, you know, once, twice a year, three times every other year, whatever the ratio is. It seems to be a rather recurring theme. Anywho, there was some talk about, I'm not sure if the actual shooter is a white person. I haven't been able to get a good look at his face. I know from looking at his name from the Seattle Times report. Could be a non-white, non-black person. There's a heavy population of those non-white people here in the Seattle area. But I'm not sure. If anybody can get a better like video image or what have you, that would be grand. His name, Nicholas Fernandez. Nicholas spelled with a K. They do have individuals who are classified as white who speak Spanish and Portuguese. So, you know, that's not the end all be all. But like I said, I'm not sure. His bail, they moved it to $150,000, but he is still in custody, arrested, and still in prison, awaiting, I guess, the trial and whatever is going to happen. But, yeah, I, and they said the black male victim who was shot, again, his name, Gregory, they said he had a fist in the air after he was shot, after the whole incident. I just, VGQ, the symbols, black people with a fist in the air, has seen a lot of that over the years. Generally does not solve the problem. Sometimes it causes more problems. I think Dr. John Carlos, Tommy Smith, I think they got more problems after they went out with a fist in the air. Victims of white supremacy. Anywho, so that is part one. We had Mel. She's done great narration here at the Cows over the years. She narrated for the autobiography of Malcolm X. She narrated for Stupid Talk, Crazy Talk. Hopefully we can get her back to do some more reading soon. But she called in this past weekend. She's in Sacramento, and she was talking about how stressful the so-called rioting down the unruly street activity was in Sacramento, California. And she said that they had a stiff curfew and that they couldn't even get to the grocery store because they had this curfew in place, and that it was just wild. And I said, you know, I hope things calm down, you're able to get some level of normalcy and kind of get back to being able to get items at the grocery store, essential things that you need to live. And she checked in today and she shared a report about what is happening in California currently, or at least in her area of California currently. So she sends in this report. I put it on the Facebook page. Y'all can check it out if you are so interested. California gunmen, self-proclaimed militia members, patrol rural Black Lives Matter protests. And I mean, this is linked, even though this is kind of segueing into the other portion of what I wanted to discuss. This is nicely connecting them both. In Oakdale, a rumored protest did not materialize, but counter-protesters and armed militia were on the streets instead. In Oakdale, a rumored protest did not... Oh, no, no, no. From the Central Coast to the North State, Black Lives Matter protesters are taking to the streets in some of California's smaller cities and encountering armed individuals who say they want to protect property. The gunmen have watched protests from rooftops and street corners, in some cases wearing army-like uniforms with military service patches. As more than 200 people marched in Arroyo Grande, armed gunmen took to the roof of a local mixed martial arts gym, according to the San Luis Obispo Tribune. The owner of that gym, John Hackelman, suspected racist, later posted a video to Facebook saying that he was worried that protesters might vandalize his business. He was scared. Anyway, they said there had been no vandalism or mischief, criminal protesting in this area at any point. It's been, you know, peaceful marching, all of it that's happened there to this point. Anyway, that's what I mean in terms of, you know, my thought process about participation in these events. I know we have Cal's listeners who've gone out and participated. I don't recall anybody saying offhand that it was the most constructive investment of time and energy ever, but I do know some folks have been out participating this time and other times previously. And it's a lot to consider. So do we have a plan for the armed militia? Do we have a plan for when they drive through the protest? Do we have a plan for the armed motorist who drives through the protesters? Lots of things. Tear gas, I mean, lots of things. The Rona, lots of things to ponder. Even are they going to be trying to intentionally infect us with the Rona? Because that has been discussed. Lots of things to discuss. Just in general, I don't think it's constructive for non-white people and black people especially. Black people especially to be in environments where literally anything could happen, and emphasis on anything destructive, anything non-constructive, where you could be harmed, could happen at any moment. Those are the type of environments non-white people need to avoid. We're going to need logic to solve this problem. Ain't no logic in the streets. Not in this context. Not that I've seen. Continuing with that same theme about logic in the streets now, one of the themes that has emerged, and again, white people are most to blame, that I suspect they could be the origin for this, and particularly this time around. That's another thing that bothers me about all of this greatly, is that frequently these conversations happen as though we all have collective amnesia and don't remember the last time or the last 10 times that we all came out to run around in the streets about a Negro being killed by police or a neighborhood watchman or just a random white person, period. Badge or no. So this time around, the response that some whites have had, a number, enough white people that has been highly significant to me, the number of whites who are saying, oh yes, defund the police. We should defund the police department. Really? Wow. That collective amnesia, because we talked about this. I could say quite a bit about the defunding of police and what have you, but this is one I will shh. Because we have been here for 11 years, and that is one thing that bothers me, talking about this with collective amnesia, because sometimes people are just saying the exact same thing that they said when this was Trayvon Martin, or when this was Sandra Bland, or when this was Freddie Gray, or when this was Eric Garner, or when this was Rodney King, insert name of, you know, the black person that the last time that we did this. Can't talk, or I think it would be better, I think it would show some progress if we're not talking that way. So this time, we will rewind. We'll give one quick snippet. This will be an audio clip. This is the only current audio snippet. It's the first one. This is from yesterday in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where there seems to be unanimous, that what they said, veto-proof support for defunding the police department. And they talk a little bit about, you know, what that would look like in its place. That's what Mr. Fuller says, right? Compensation. You take something away, you have to compensate what's going to be in its place. So they talk about that a little bit. Everything else is old, okay? Emphasis, everything else. All the other audio that you hear is old. And it's all about defunding the police department. Nothing new need be said on this topic. So the first clip after the Minneapolis segment is right here in Seattle, because they've been talking about that here in Seattle for a while, defunding the police department. In fact, they've been talking about defunding the police so long that if that conversation comes up here and they say, oh, okay, we're going to defund the Seattle Police Department, you would hear Gustee say, well, I need to revise my thinking, and I also need to start thinking about getting out of Seattle if they make that decision here. But I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, they have been talking about alternatives to police here in Seattle for some time. That clip will play. That's from 2016, nothing new. And then we'll hear Gus T. We had a black Chicago police officer, former Chicago police officer. She was a guest on the program back in March of 2015. The first time we attempted to have her on the program, we had a mishap and she missed. We had to reschedule and she was great. She came back. We had her on the program that I think 2 days afterwards. But the first time around, we missed. And so as opposed to, you know, calling her names and going crazy or what have you, we hung out, we did the program, we talked mostly about workplace racism. But before we got to that, because this was at the time of Freddie Gray, we talked about defunding the police department, what it would look like if you no longer have police. Really important article that was in the Washington Post at that time. Give a little bit of detail about this. And then Mr. Fuller, I posted on Facebook, I said, man, I understand a little bit more each day, each month, each year, unfortunately, why Mr. Fuller has at the front of both books, and he emphasizes it all the time, that is the Mr. Fuller refrain, if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works, everything else will confuse you. People start talking about problems with the police and how to go about solving this problem. That is for sure. When you have that conversation and you don't understand what white supremacy racism is, how it works, confusion. That will be the final with Neely Fuller Jr. And that's also old. Nothing new except the first one. First audio segment, that is from yesterday in Minnesota, where there seems to be great momentum to defund the police department. Last thing, and then we'll get the clip. This segment, I'm going to post the image so that you all can see it. This is from Minneapolis Public Radio. And the full title of the report, so you can check it out yourself, Veto-Proof Majority of Minneapolis Council Members Supports Dismantling Police Department. That's the full title. And so the image they have with this report, not a whole lot of black people in Minnesota either. Me and Chris Rock agree there. But the image they have is a lot of people. Looks like hundreds of people. They're outside at a park or grassy knoll of some sort. And it looks like it's a lot of white people there. Be surprised if it wasn't. And they're wearing purple, right? Minneapolis prints, right? Okay. So they're wearing purple, a lot of them. And this picture specifically, it's got a lot of black people in the center from Black Visions. Maybe that's the name of the group. But they're in the center. They're wearing purple, and they have defund police, those shirts on, and then they've got white people in the background. And I looked at this, and I said, yep. Again, black people with their fist in the air, because that's what they've got, yelling, mouth open, where it looks like they're yelling or shouting something about, you know, the police and police reform. They got some other black people with the Tommy Smith, just as I did, Juan Carlos, Tommy Smith, fist in the air. White people know how to handle this. They knew how to handle Dr. John Carlos, Tommy Smith. They handled them effectively. 50 years. They have advanced. They know how to handle black people out yelling in the street pretty much about anything. That is not a problem for the system of white supremacy, and just something really stuck out to me about the whole image, to have these black people up front, then you got all the white people in behind just shouting black people, yelling about defunding the police and just blazing that across. If you don't understand the system of racism, white supremacy, everything else will confuse you. Again, VGQ, I haven't figured out everything. I'm still learning myself, but this is one I've come to a conclusion based on logic, evidence. This one is not rocket science. We will get to the audio clips and then check in if folks have comments. I guess especially if we have Seattle listeners, you can check in and let us know if you've been in Seattle, if you were terrorized, or maybe Gus is just an old scaredy cat. But we'll hear the audio clips discussing defunding the police. Again, the only new segment is the very first clip talking about Minnesota context of white supremacy.
A veto-proof majority of Minneapolis City Council members has come out in favor of dismantling the city's police department. 9 council members appeared at a rally in Powderhorn Park yesterday to promote defunding the police. And though they won cheers from the crowd, the council members didn't offer many details on the process of disbanding the department and what they proposed to replace it with. Brett Williams has her story.
George Floyd's death at the hands of Minneapolis police officers 2 weeks ago did not start the movement to defund or shut down the police department. Over the past several years, police killings of citizens sparked similar demands from groups like MPD 150 and Reclaim the Block. Sometimes those demonstrations occurred in city council chambers. And now, some of the council members who sat across the dais from the people chanting those demands, like Alondra Cano, have adopted the same position.
I'm the 9th Ward council member. I'm no longer a reformist.
Cano is the head of the council's Public Safety Committee, which has often featured discussions on police policies and proposals to help build community trust in the department. But now Cano and her colleagues say the time for reforms has passed and that the department has to be taken apart and replaced with something new. Councilmember Philippe Cunningham says the department should be replaced with well-funded resources designed to help people in crisis.
What we know is that officers, and they will say themselves, that they are not the best response for a myriad of issues. Public health crisis or mental health crises, opioid overdoses, even domestic violence. They know that they're not the best response because it's just a cycle of like going back and going back and going back, and they're not trained social workers.
Cunningham represents part of North Minneapolis, which normally sees a heavy police presence. But he says those officers were in short supply last week as people rioted in parts of the city and burned buildings. Cunningham says his constituents banded together to look out for their neighbors.
And so even as things slow down in terms of like the urgency of needing to be out and protecting the community, we are going to continue building. We've built a movement over North Minneapolis.
Cunningham and other council members say the process to dismantle the department will take time. Cam Gordon, who has served on the city council for more than 14 years, says the charter requires the city to fund a police department. So he says that will have to be changed, likely through a voter referendum during the next city elections in 2021. In the meantime, Gordon says the council can start by changing ordinances, the police contract, and the budget.
We have other levers that we can work on now. And maybe it's a time for the city council to just try exerting more power in steps, and the mayor and everyone will, and the police department will go along with it, even if they think they might be able to challenge us based on the charter.
But for all the talk about getting rid of the current police system, there was little discussion Sunday on what exactly would replace it. Activist Tony Williams supports replacing the department with unarmed public safety responders.
So it might not be uniformed police officers or armed folks, but it might be, you know, a uniformed mental health crisis response team, for example, that handles some of these calls that looks nothing like the current police department system.
The state's Human Rights Department announced last week that it's investigating the department for racially biased policing, and the council signed off on a restraining order issued by the state courts, which, among other things, bans the use of chokeholds by officers. Police Chief Madeira Arredondo has responded to that by stating he plans on announcing reforms of his own soon. Arredondo was not available to comment on the council majority's announced intent to dismantle the department. In a statement Sunday, Mayor Jacob Frey said he'll work relentlessly for reform that addresses systemic racism, but he said he does not support disbanding the police department. On Saturday, Frey was booed by demonstrators seeking abolition of the police department after telling them that he didn't support their position. Brant Williams, NPR News, Minneapolis.
There are neighborhoods in Seattle where people are so concerned about their security that they have banded together to hire private police. This is happening in the affluent neighborhoods of Magnolia, Queen Anne, Ballard. Reporter Jessica Lee is tracking this trend for the Seattle Times, and she told me many of the residents are frustrated by crime and by police response times near their homes.
In a lot of these neighborhoods, residents are feeling unsafe. They're feeling as though the city's police force is not having a strong enough presence in their neighborhood, and they have the means necessary to change that, to ease their minds. And so they are hiring, whether it be off-duty police officers, SPD officers, or these private security personnel to increase patrolling in their neighborhood. And it seems to be easing a lot of people's minds. They say that it is deterring criminals. They're seeing crime rates go down. However, statistically showing that is a little bit trickier.
Well, let me ask you, we've had wealthy neighborhoods and fears of crime for a long, long time. Why do we see more of this hiring of private security forces?
Sure. Well, the direct correlation is a little bit hard to draw, but I mean, there is definitely, at the same time, this movement coming or this this push from residents to bump up policing, to boost staffing at the city level. They feel as though right now SPD is not cutting it for them. They say that with this new population, this bigger population, these crimes are just escalating, and then therefore they need to take matters into their own hands to hire these patrols.
And what's the reality? Are crimes, break-ins, drug use, is this going up, up, up?
I think that's the question that many people ask, and even the mayor, you know, is coming to this question of perception versus reality, right? Statistically, if you look at the last 5 years of property-related theft in these three neighborhoods, there was not a dramatic spike last year. The number of crimes, of these sorts of crimes, are going up since 2010, but there's not the level of intensity as maybe some residents think.
So you alluded to reasons why there might be a perception of increased danger in some of these neighborhoods. By the way, we're talking, what, Ballard, Magnolia,
Queen Anne?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think there is this heightened perception these days of danger and crime?
Police are telling us that crime is going down over 2015. They're citing an early estimate of a 10% decrease overall in the city for crime. But then you have these large and extreme frustrations from these residents in these neighborhoods that you cited saying, no, that's not so much the case. And so there's this disconnect here. And so trying to figure out why that may be, one of the topics that came up in several interviews as I was reporting this story is social media is another method, a new method for reporting that many people are going to. It's no longer the case like it was a decade ago when you have your car broken into, you call 911, you call an officer, and you have it formally reported, and that report then stays within the police department. Well, now most people are going online, they're sharing what happened to them, they're posting videos. If my neighbor reports a car prowl, my car gets broken into, we're going to go back and forth on social media, it's going to get shares, and now more people who would not necessarily know that that is happening to both me and my neighbor, they're going to know that this is happening, and then their level of awareness is heightened as well.
So this idea of if you can afford it, you've got this extra protection around you. What could that mean for the ideal of equality in our city?
That's something that many people have brought forward since the story has published, and I have no answer to that other than, you know, if you are a resident who has the means to hire this type of personnel to ease your mind, you're feeling unsafe, strong and emotional concerns, then there's nothing stopping you. I think the question is this hiring a result of an overworked police department, of staffing levels not where they should be? And those are the types of questions that should move forward and be answered.
Jessica Lee is a staff reporter for the Seattle Times. This morning, I asked Seattle's Mayor Ed Murray what he thinks of this trend toward private policing.
Well, I think it's unfortunate. And if you look at those neighborhoods that have significant issues of crime, they're not the neighborhoods who can afford to hire private security guards. Now, there has been, and there was a problem with policing when I became mayor. I tell you, the police force is pretty demoralized and had pretty mixed signals about what they were supposed to do. We have a new chief just over a year now. She's brought on a new command staff. And based on the data that she shares with me on a weekly basis, crime is actually coming down in Seattle. Now, some crime, particularly property crime-related cars, we're still struggling with. But crime generally is coming down. I also realize that some of the neighborhoods that have a sense that crime is rising when it's actually not are the same neighborhoods who often are using extensive social media tools that monitor crime.
So let's say some people in Magnolia or Queen Anne are hiring security guards and they don't really need them. So what? What's wrong with that?
Well, if that's how they want to spend their money, they can spend their money that way.
Well, you called you said the trend was unfortunate.
Campaign that we would increase the number of officers over attrition by 104 years. We're on target to do that. We now actually have more officers on the street, again, according to what I've been told, than we did when I came into office. We are in a process of evaluating how many more officers beyond that we should add, given that Seattle's growing and growing rapidly. But let me put a caveat on that. Most problems with police forces that we see that nationally where a police officer acts in a way that ends up in some of the problems we have happens in the first 5 years of that officer's career. So we're not going to rush a whole bunch of new young officers on the street. We're going to do this deliberately. We're going to increase it over time. And we're going to be sure that the officers we hire have the skills to deal with some of the very difficult situations out there.
Is when a wealthy neighborhood hires some private security guards, what does that have to do with a poorer neighborhood that can't afford it? Does it hurt that neighborhood at all? Or maybe it helps divert resources to that neighborhood?
Again, the point is, when we look at a city with a fairly low crime rate in most categories, and you look at a city that has to decide where policing should happen, it should go to neighborhoods that have higher rates of crime. Those generally, not always, but generally, are not Seattle's affluent neighborhoods, the neighborhoods that can afford to buy or pay for their own private security.
But does the private security let the city say, okay, great, you pay for it, we'll divert some of those resources to neighborhoods that need it more?
Absolutely not. We do not take, I will not, and the chief will not, make decisions about where we put police based on private security forces. You know, we have a huge problem in this country right now over cops, police officers who aren't trained well enough to deal with difficult situations. And now we're going out there, some neighborhoods, and hiring people to do security that don't even come close to the training that our own officers have. I think that is a recipe for another disaster.
A recipe for another disaster. That was Seattle Mayor Ed Murray reacting to the trend of wealthier neighborhoods hiring private security guards.
There was another report. This is in the Washington Post. This was yesterday, which, I mean, it's in the same vein, but it's even worse, in my opinion. I'll read it. That'll give me enough time. I mean, it's just important, period, but it'll give me time. That way I can ring our guest to see if she'll be joining us for the evening. But the report is titled, Private Police Carry Guns and Make Arrests, and Their Ranks Are Swelling. It reads, Michael Ulan stopped a driver in Manassas apartment complex on a recent night and wrote the man a ticket for driving on a suspended license. With a badge on his chest and a gun on his hip, Ulan gave the driver a stern warning to stay off the road. The stop was routine police work except for one fact. Ulan is not a Manassas officer. The citation came courtesy of the private force he created that, until recently, he called the Manassas Junction Police Department. He is its chief and sole officer. He is a force of one. And he is not alone. Like more and more Virginians, Ulan gained his police powers using a little-known provision of state law that allows private citizens to petition the courts for the authority to carry a gun, display a badge, and make arrests. The number of special conservators of the peace, or SCOPs as they are known, has doubled in Virginia over the past decade to roughly 750, according to state records. The growth is mirrored nationally in the ranks of private police, who increasingly patrol corporate campuses, neighborhoods, and museums as the demand for private security has increased and police services have been cut in some places. The trend has raised concerns. Often receive a small fraction of the training and oversight of their municipal counterparts. arrests of private police officers and incidents involving SCOPs overstepping their authority have also raised concerns. The Virginia legislature approved a bill Friday increasing the training and regulation of SCOPs. The private officers would now be required to train for 130 hours, up from 40 hours, less than the state requires for nail technicians, auctioneers, and security guards. In neighboring Washington, D.C., a similar designation called special police requires 40 hours of training. Maryland officials leave instruction to the discretion of employers but have no requirements. Other states have similar systems. There are a number of groups regulate far more stringently than SCOPs carrying a gun, said Virginia Secretary of Public Safety Brian Morin, speaking prior to the passage of the bill. The conservator of the peace concept predates modern policing. It has its origins in English common law, and the first Virginia statute was enacted in 1860 to allow proprietors of watering places to protect their establishments. Now, they have watering places in quotes. I think they mean bars, whites and their alcohol, notorious, but I think they're talking about fire water. Anywho, the designation still retains some of that informality. No authority regulates the conduct of SCOPs or addresses complaints against them, although a court can revoke their commissions. The state does not track the number of arrests they make or citations they issue. Most COPs patrol corporate campuses, work for neighborhood associations, or perform code enforcement for counties or cities, but Yulin has pushed the model further by creating his own department and turning policing into an enterprise. He contracts his service to 9 apartment and housing communities in the Manassas area. That's up from 1 in 2012. The SCOPs are free to call themselves police in Virginia, although the new bill would require court approval. Yulin recently dropped police department from the name of his operation, anticipating that lawmakers would restrict use of the term. It is now called Manassas Junction LLC. Yulin, who is a former police officer, said he sees his work as a complement to the Manassas force, not a replacement for it. He said he provides the type of intensive policing, hands-on engagement with the community, and attention to small problems that the city simply doesn't have the resources or manpower to provide. I'm a part-time police officer and a part-time advocate, Yulin said of his work, and I would hope a part-time role model and steady security presence for these communities. On the night Yulin wrote the suspended license ticket, he pulled his black Ford Fusion with tinted windows out of the Colonial Village apartments around 8 p.m. Yulin, 30, spends his shifts circulating among communities he covers until the early hours of the morning. He deals mostly with loitering, traffic infractions, noise complaints, minor drug offenses, and nuisances that can impact quality of life. He said he has never pulled his gun. At one point during another patrol, Yulin rolled up next to 2 mattresses that someone had propped against a tree in a townhome community. He said he would return later to investigate and possibly issue a citation to a violator. At another point, he checked in with the mother of a teen who had gotten into trouble with neighbors to make sure the boy was still in school and playing football. Yulin wore a black vest with the word police emblazoned across it as he talked to the woman. Yulin said he turns any felony-type incidents, such as assaults, rapes, or shootings, over to the Manassas police to handle, but if he does go to court, he testifies and provides evidence in cases just as a municipal police officer would. Yulin said he was a police officer in upstate New York before spending several years on the Manassas force. He said he left to start a private investigator service and then became a SCOP after reading about a housing community in Stafford County called Akia Harbor that had its own private police force. In many ways, Yulin's operation functions much as any police department. Ulan has a dispatch number that residents can call and a daily blotter that he posts on Manassas Junction website, along with flyers for suspects and notices about recent incidents. He gives reports about crime at homeowners association meetings. In 2014, Ulan recorded 77 arrests and ticket citations and handed out 162 parking violations, according to his statistics. He responded to 221 calls for service. Manassas City Police Chief Douglas W. King said he has concerns about Ulan, saying his presence has created confusion among citizens, magistrates, and even judges. King said many who encounter him assume he represents the city. Any misunderstanding or confusion in this could greatly impact the relationship with trust, relationship and trust within our community, Keene wrote in an email. Prince William County Commonwealth's Attorney Paul Ebert said SCOP's lack of training and their backgrounds have sometimes undermined prosecutions, though he did not point to any specific cases. His office noted they had not had any issues with Ulan. The trouble of prosecuting cases from those folks is that we have to vouch for the credibility of the complainant, Ebert said. A lot of them are not trained and don't have pasts that are conducive to law enforcement. But Crystal Tarrant, owner of Burke Community Management, which manages 8 properties that Ulan patrols, said calls to police have dropped dramatically since she hired Ulan. He's cleaned up a lot of the petty crime and traffic stuff, Tarrant said. He offers a sense of security to residents. He's befriended the kids so they have respect, so they respect the property more. A handful of incidents involving SCOPs in Virginia and nationally have focused attention on training and oversight of private police. In 2009, a SCOP who owned a private security firm got into a heated argument with a woman over parking at a Newport News area shopping center, according to court records. Kevin Bukowski hemmed in the woman's vehicle, and then he and a partner pointed their guns directly at the woman and a friend as they sat in their car with 2 children, court records show. Bukowski was convicted of abduction, and the state revoked his SCOP registration in 2012. Now, this is an incident where I would like the racial classification to know if this was a black mother and black children that these pseudo officers pulled their weapons on and hemmed them in so that they couldn't move, but they don't have photographs or any of that information. But that's what I would love to know. Anywho, I was unjustly punished, but there are a lot of problems with the system, Bukowski said of SCOPs. You got these guys running out there as security officers who couldn't make it as police officers. In another incident in 2012, a SCOP on a motorcycle with flashing lights and various law enforcement style stickers pulled over a Virginia State Police special agent driving on I-64 near the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel, according to court records. The SCOP asked the officer why he was going so fast. The officer replied, "Who are you?" and flashed his badge, according to court records. The SCOP then rode off. The officer said the man on the motorcycle was likely a SCOP named Michael Tenen, who runs a security officer training academy in Virginia Beach. Portsmouth police questioned Tenen after he was seen conducting another traffic stop in 2013, according to court documents. He told officers his SCOP status allowed him to perform traffic stops. He also said he was a retired state trooper, but later admitted he failed out of the academy. The Virginia Attorney General's office moved to strip Tenen of his SCOP commission in Portsmouth in 2013, and Tenen agreed to surrender it. In an interview, Tenen said he was unaware of the allegations and would have challenged them if he had known about them. "I categorically deny these things," Tenen said. The government's motion to vacate Tenen's SCOP commission in Portsmouth said he was unfit for an appointment, but state records show Tenen is still registered as a SCOP in Virginia Beach. Backers note that SCOPs can play a valuable role and that problems are rare. John Hall, president of American Security Group in Richmond, said his company employs SCOPs. He said they provide an affordable way to boost security for many communities. There's a void in a lot of the homeowners associations, light rails, and business parks, Hall said. There has to be some type of role there between public and private. Experts say Virginia's increase in SCOPs is part of a nationwide uptick in private security that began in the 1970s and accelerated after the September 11th attacks. The number of private security guards, nearly 1.1 million, dwarfs the 640,000 public police officers, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. While the numbers have increased, training has not kept pace. A 2012 study from a University of Illinois College of Law assistant professor found that private police are chronically undertrained and nearly a third nationwide face almost no regulation. States other than Virginia have faced issues as well. In 2012, more than 20 residents of the Cherry Hill neighborhood of Baltimore filed a $25 million lawsuit against a Cleveland security company claiming its guards had abused residents and violated their civil rights by stopping them illegally and making false arrests. Two of the three guards named in the suit were special police, a designation similar to SCOPs in Virginia. In 2005, a special police officer tasked with guarding government buildings in D.C. was convicted of a felony after carrying out an armed robbery in Georgetown using the revolver issued by his security company. To become a SCOP in Virginia, an individual must register with the Virginia Department of Criminal Justice Services. That requires the applicant to pass a criminal background check and an alcohol and drug test. The new bill ups the training requirement to 130 hours for armed SCOPs, still far less than the 580 to 1,200 hours required of municipal police officers in the state. The individual then petitions a court to be commissioned with the sponsorship of an employer. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe is expected to sign the bill increasing training and regulation for SCOPs. Senator Thomas K. Normant Jr., who sponsored it, said he would like to eventually bar SCOPs from calling themselves police and using flashing lights. The current bill allows them to do both with the permission of the courts. I'm pleased with the progress, but there is still some work to do, Normant said. That is the full report. It is at the Washington Post. It is, again, titled Private Police Carry Guns and Make Arrests, and Their Ranks Are Swelling. This is something I would definitely think Black people should be informed and concerned about, wherever you happen to live, because they said this is increasing nationally. But I had never even heard of such a thing until yesterday when I saw this report. I mean, this is like Trayvon Martin's killer on a whole nother level. I can't even imagine someone just out rolling in their private vehicle and they hop out and they got a badge of some sort and a gun and are telling you do this, do that, you know, whatever the case may be. And this is not even, you know, much less all the problems we have with regular. These are, I guess, authorized enforcement officers just have random citizens who have gone through this and filed some paperwork and did their little 130 hours of training. And now they got a gun and a badge and they can go out and do what I mean. Wow. Again, just the importance of being informed about things that are happening. And I even see on a different side, maybe this is something Black people should be doing. We have so many problems with enforcement officers and even folks, many Black people who are saying that they do want enforcement officials in their area because they have problems with these quality of life incidents and vandalism or whatever other low-level crimes and things that are happening. Maybe this is something that Black people could do to see if they could sign up, petition and go through, you know, the 130 hours of training or whatever it is. And then you could have Black people that are patrolling their own neighborhoods, and that way you could call them as opposed to calling enforcement officers. I know this is one of the components that doesn't get as much attention. The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, they were doing something like this. They were setting up patrols so that people could call them as opposed to having to call the man to come in if it was a domestic dispute or if, you know, a boyfriend was being abusive to his female partner, or, you know, just a lot of low-level stuff, which is a lot of most of what the enforcement officers are called for. Our guest for the evening, she was talking about that as well in her time, that's most of what the calls are anyway. And so, hey, maybe that's something, and might even be an employment opportunity if Black people in Virginia or other places where they have this set up, if you could do this, you could perhaps be employed by the local Black residents to do this, to kind of help keep the area safe and not have to consistently call the whatever the local police department is to come in and do, you know, respond to your issues and problems. But either way, all the way around, I think it's important, something folks should keep an eye on. As I said, they are hiring off-duty enforcement officers out here in Seattle, but this same sort of push to have, in my view, what it is whites having their own private militias go around and patrol, definitely something that should raise huge suspicions for Black people victims of racism.
For years, I mean, they worked hard saying what we need is some Black policemen, man. I mean, I'm telling you, because we ain't got nothing but white cops in this town. Boy, and they are killing us right and left. I've heard that as far back as the 1940s. Man, we needed some, you know. So you got some Black ones, you know. And then, yeah, some of them was killing Black people. I mean, you know, back in my day, all like that. See? But did nobody say nothing about, well, we need to go back to the way it was. Have all Ku Klux Klansmen. And nobody on the police force but Klansmen. All right? Then everything will be nice and clear. You better believe it'll be nice and clear.
I totally, and I've said that.
Because I'm going to tell you what that means now in that town. Now, you had Black policemen, and some of them was, you know, were flipping on Black people and all like that. And, you know, and that gave the white law enforcement people some relief. So you got these Black toms out here with these guns and badges, see? And they mistreating Black people. So you got rid of them, all right? But you're in that town, all right? Now they went back to having the same ones that they had before they had the Black ones. Now you ain't in the town because you better leave. You ain't going to be able to stay there at all now.
Wow.
Once you make that move, you might as well quit your job and everything because you ain't got nothing going for you now.
Wow. Wow.
At least that so-called Black Tom, you know, that you went to school with, I mean, every now and then, I mean, he say, hey, you know, they coming out here and raid this gambling game tonight, so y'all can't play no dice tonight, you know. Well, see, every now and then, he was playing dice, too. So he at least had a little bit of brick. They ain't paying him no money, you know. Right. And that's the truth, you know.
Mm.
He's the deputy for the colored, I mean, you know, right? That's what they used to call him sometimes, you know. And but the thing about it, he'd be right down there eating, you know, chili with you and same old juice joints. I mean, you know, white folks didn't like him neither. I mean, so you know, he stayed away from there, and he knew it, right?
Wow. I brought that up because I know I have read many, many books from all over where they said exactly what you just said. They didn't have any Black police officers for decades, and Black people fought, and the NAACP protested, and
see, the white supremacists already know that. They say now, if we just get enough Black policemen out here killing Black people and whatnot and arrest them and all like that on bogus charges and all like that, the Black people will say, hey, get rid of all these Black policemen. And they'll say, oh, is that y'all want? That's what y'all want? You know? Say, yeah, because they sell out. Say, ain't nothing but Tom. Say, okay. You know? Say, now, do you want any policemen at all? Well, yeah, we want good ones. Well, now, the good ones are, you know, they wear white hats and white faces, too. Right, you know? All you geniuses is right back where you started from, right? Which is where, exactly where we want you, because we didn't want these niggas on the force no way. They don't do it. I'm going to go somewhere and sleep and chase women, you know, right?
That's what I mean, when you say system that's designed, like I think you had said before, like it's understanding this system.
Yeah, you've got to understand the system. The white law enforcement officers say, we don't want no niggas on the force, no way. We can't even tell nigger jokes no more, you know, right?
Right. You know? And you were saying, like, they got it either way. If you say, well, we want police officers, okay, we can put black people here and have black people beat you up. We can have white people here and have white people beat you up. If you say, okay, we don't want any police officers, fine, no problem.
Fine, no problem there, right, you know. Now you niggas are just killing each other. I mean, ain't nobody coming when you when you call 911. Good luck with that. Ain't nobody coming.
Exactly. It's like they. I mean, that's what a system means. Like they got it.
That's right. Yeah.
They got it any way they want to deal with you. Like just.
In other words, all you black people out here complaining about somebody broke in your car and somebody did this and all like that. We'll call. You know, hey. You finally eliminate all the black police and then all of what you call the racist police, so we're going to send Barney Fife. I mean, you know, good luck with that.
Exactly. Like, that's what I said. I keep seeing all this, like you were saying before. It's just the same thing being repeated over and over, and people are just not getting a correct understanding of this is supposed to happen. Like I thought when President Obama, when he said we could just have a world where we just have these sort of periodic confrontations, I was like, that's what it is. That's exactly what you just have these little flare-ups from now to then under the system, and then it just goes back to, you know, business as usual on the plantation.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Context of white supremacy. Neely Fuller Jr., producejustice.com, code book, word guide. If you don't understand the system of white supremacy, what it is, how it works, everything else that you do understand will only confuse you. Lots of different ways that could work. Before I give my comment, had the audacity, someone said, oh, Gus T, he doesn't like black authors. The nerve. So we've had our Cows Book Club for almost a decade. The second book that we read on the book club, in my top 10, the late great Toni Morrison, The Bluest Eye, we've read two of her books in the Cows Book Club. But the first was The Bluest Eye, in my top 10, one of my all-time favorites. Slight pause for literary. I was reminded of one of my favorite quotes, very applicable right here. That's the only reason I'm reading it. I destroyed white baby dolls, but the dismembering of the dolls was not the true horror. The truly horrifying thing was the transference of the same impulses to little white girls. The indifference with which I could have axed them was shaken only by my desire to do so, to discover what eluded me, the secret of the magic they weaved on others, what made people look at them and say, aw, but not for me. The eye slide of black women as they approached them on the street and the possessive gentleness of their touch as they handled them. If I pinched them, their eyes, unlike the crazed glint of the baby doll's eyes, would fold in pain, and their cry would not be the sound of an icebox door, but a fascinating cry of pain. When I learned how repulsive this disinterested violence was, that it was repulsive because it was disinterested, my shame floundered about for refuge. The best hiding place was love. Thus, the conversion from pristine sadism to fabricated hatred to fraudulent love. it was a small step to Shirley Temple. I learned much later to worship her, just as I learned to delight in cleanliness, knowing, even as I learned, that the change was adjustment without improvement. The change was adjustment without improvement. Racists, white supremacists, they are extraordinary at offering non-white people change, that is adjustment without improvement. Toni Morrison. In the archives, second book in the Cows Book Club. Remember what it's like to read good books on the Cows Book Club. I'll only say with the defunding police, the emphasis, all of the reports except the first report on Minneapolis, and they have a veto-proof majority, they were old reports. So for about 5 years, SCOPs, they call them. George Zimmerman, put it plural, George Zimmerman's. I think Ahmaud Arbery wasn't killed by an enforcement officer, unless I'm mistaken. Now, I think that's exactly what they were talking about, because they said they had connections to law enforcement, like they washed out, they couldn't hack it as law enforcement. But that program at the end, a lot of times he says, minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. You would still have race soldiers if you took all the badges away. That's accurate, logical understanding of white supremacy racism. In fact, I think with the whole Boogaloo movement, right, we talked about that. Talk about it some more. But you got a lot of white people saying, we got too much government regulation anyway. I don't need you telling me what to do, bossing me around, and telling me how to live my life. I'm grown. I don't want to wear a mask. What did I say? I don't want to wear a mask. In fact, I don't want to stay at home either. I'm a white man. I'm a white woman. I don't need police to protect my domicile. I go to the gun range. I practice. I'm a white man. I got lots and lots of firearms, more than what you all got at the police station. I'm good. Don't need any of that. Let a coon come through here. Been seeing some of that with the protesters. That was what Mel said down in California. That's what they had here. They had pictures. That's why I said it is total. It is terrifying. They had white people in Bellevue here in the suburbs broke out their gun. I didn't see badge the first. All I saw was assault rifles and pickup trucks and white people. White children, white elders, white men, white women. They had coffee cups and guns. What'd I say? Washington State. Starbucks? Firearms. Change without improvement. Still got armed white men. Now they don't have a gun. Excuse me. Now they don't have a badge. Could look lots of different ways. And particularly since you have, it seems like, wow, I don't remember this many white people saying, yes, defund the police. Like, I don't remember that 5 years ago. It's a lot of that now. Like, wow. Like, they must have a lot of pride. Well, they said their numbers were swelling. That was the title of the Washington report that Washington Post report that I read. Their numbers were swelling in 2015. Who knows what it is now with the Rona and all the rest of it? Oh, my. And they've had 5 years to grow their ranks even more, and Boogaloo Boys and Proud Boys and all the rest of it. Oh, my. Sure. No police. No problem. Wild Wild West. Don't they romanticize that? Wild Wild West. Yes. We'll all get to be enforcement. Well, we whites, we will all get to be enforcement officers. Change without improvement. The number is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you have thoughts, questions. If something is not logical or inaccurate, that is great. If we have any folks that are in the Seattle area, if you were around to observe what has been taking place the last few weeks, maybe you felt empowered by all of this. You know, maybe you got some jewelry. I don't know. If you, you know, observed any of what has been going down, feel free to chime in. Let us know. Number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. I've seen a lot of images of white people with guns, not necessarily badges, but guns in Seattle. Like, oh, is my line connected? Did it go? What the heck? Let's see. What's going on? Oh, okay. Let's see. Am I being heard? Okay, looks like I'm being heard. I was a little confused because it didn't look like I was being heard. For a second, I'll double check and make sure folks aren't missing the audio. Let's see. Just checking in. Our caller in Florida, you could hear me because it looked like I wasn't being heard for a second. Were you able to hear me last few seconds?
It just came on over on my end.
Oh, okay. That is crazy. I don't know what, because I didn't even press any buttons or anything. I didn't touch anything. I noticed that the audio wasn't on. I went to click my mute button. I clicked it, unclicked it, and anyway. All right. Well, it's on and playing now. Folks were able to hear the opening audio. Were you able to hear the introduction for the program?
I only heard maybe like the first couple of minutes. And then I went to the Black Talk Radio Network,
mm-hmm.
and it was playing just fine there.
Uh-huh.
And then I was able to call up, and then I was able to hear the dialogue with Mr. Fuller
around
that point.
Okay. I don't know if there's some wackiness going on. I was listening to the live feed, so it was playing there. I don't know if my audio snippet just now looks like it may not have gone out, but it looks like it was recorded. But that's odd, because I didn't really tamper with anything per se to, like, oh, this was not done or this was not. Anyway, working now. Well, hopefully it'll be all good once we get back in. I said after the audio concluded in talking about the police, I read a section from Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye, where the key line is change without improvement, that white people are excellent at offering scenarios where it's change without improvement. And when I say that, I mean it's a little bit different, but it's not any better. And they could decide, yes, we will defund the police departments, although I don't think that's going to happen on a mass scale. But they could make that decision on some level. I don't think that would be an improvement for black people. They heard in the report about the private police departments, they've had a lot of time to swell their numbers. That's what they were talking about in 2015. So I don't exactly think white people, or I put it this way, when Mr. Fuller talks about things having a more adverse impact on black people than white people, I think it would be way more detrimental to black people, having an environment with no police where you could have private police departments and that sort of thing, little private militias for whites. No, that does not seem better at all. And I'm sure that that sort of thing would be rampant, particularly now with everything that's happened with the Rona and everything else. So Yeah, and again, that report from 2015. And one thing that I did not share that I'll go ahead and get in now really quick and then get out the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. I had said, so the audio was from 5 years ago. So back in 2015, when they had that report about Kevin Bukowski in Virginia, that he and his partner blocked in this motorist at a store, some store or what have you, blocked her in and had her at gunpoint. And I said, ooh, I would like to know the racial classifications of Mr. Bukowski. So the person, the victim, who he had at gunpoint with her children, her name is Tanikia Bassett, and this is, I found the Bukowski v. Commonwealth of Virginia, the appeals court record from 2013 when he tried to get his conviction overturned and it was denied. But they have the victim's name listed as Tanikia Bassett. Now, I could be wrong, and I did do some looking online and found some images as well, but even if I didn't have those, Tanikia Bassett, I would strongly suspect, is a black person, non-white person. I have never met anyone named Tanikia, but I would be really surprised if I met Tanikia Bassett and this was a white person. But that is about what I thought to have. Now, just think about that. Defund the police department. So you got a private security outfit, private police outfit, white man, two of them. They're armed, and they go block you in at the grocery store, you and your offspring at gunpoint. You have the same thing. They have that sort of thing happen with enforcement officers right now. Just now, it's no badge. Change without improvement. That's what I said repeatedly. Hopefully, it'll be in the archive. Let's see. Folks who dialed in. Henry in Chicago. Let's see. Did you have commentary? Good to hear from you, sir.
Okay. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Greetings, Justin. Greetings to all the callers and listeners. Yes, I do agree that this defunding and dismantling police force in major cities is going to be a real problem, especially for black people. And, you know, what you just played was something that I was thinking about along the lines about militias, you know, especially white militias, coming into fruition. You know, I mean, we already have white militias around, but man, I'm pretty sure the numbers are going to skyrocket, you know, once police forces, you know, if they dismantle police forces, across the nation. But I wanted to, get your opinion, on this, and anybody else who wants to chime in on this. Kwame Raoul, non-white, black man who is the attorney general for the state of Illinois. He recommended something 5 years ago when he was a state senator, and he's bringing this back up again as the attorney general. And he recommended that police, he doesn't agree with the defunding police, but he's offering something where it's, he wants police to be licensed. Every other profession, barbers, lawyers, doctors, nail technicians, you know, they're all licensed. And the police is like the only profession that's not really, you know, a licensed profession. They may be certified, but they're not licensed. And he brings an interesting point where he says, you know, most of these incidents of race soldiers who, you know, kill non-white unarmed black people, that's not their first time, you know, probably doing something like that. So in a situation of licensing, like for instance, if a lawyer has some misconduct going on, the lawyer basically can take its, like, you know, they can take the lawyer's license away and they can never practice law again. And so he recommends, you know, police be on that same, you know, accountability, where, you know, if there's some misconduct, then basically the police officer will get his license taken and they can't go to another district like they normally do. When, you know, you get fired from a, you know, police department, they go to another one. You know, the saying that you say, you know, whites don't get fired, they just get transferred. So in this situation, you know, you don't have a police license. You can't work in any law enforcement, you know, state or, you know, city. But I thought it was interesting. Now, obviously, this is not going to solve completely the problem of, you know, race soldiers. There's still going to be race soldiers and still going to kill black folks. But I would assume, and I might be wrong on this, but there might be, you know, slightly, you know, numbers might slightly go down of race soldiers, you know, killing black people if you have a situation where, you know, if this race soldier ended up, you know, beating up an innocent person and, you know, a complaint gets filed and their license gets taken away, then, you know, obviously they can't be a policeman no more. So, I wanted to get, you know, your thoughts on that or anybody else who wants to chime in on that. And that's all I have on my mind.
Much obliged, Henry, in Chicago. I got that was, man, white people have clowned the most in 2020. It has not been funny. It's just been lots and lots of tragedies and losses all over the world. Racism, white supremacy. That being said, I did, even though it was important, it was not, I don't think, intended as jest. Much obliged again, sharing on Saturday. The fake news is rampant. I was able to share multiple reports about the black male in Chicago horse owner, where he had all of these. It seems like minimizing to call it fake news, spread about him having stolen a police horse and ended up being mistreated, had his car vandalized, and all the rest of it. Like, wow. Like I said, minimizing it to call it fake news. Deception. Deception is rampant. Strive for accuracy. Like, much obliged for sharing. Anywho, I've heard a few similar suggestions in terms of creating stipulations, like with the licensing. I heard a different one that was making each individual officer, they have to pay their own insurance as opposed to the city covering it. You have to pay your own. And so if you keep having, like exactly what you said, a lot of these officers, it's not, you know, they didn't just put their knee on George Floyd and that's it. It's lots of these. Daniel Pantaleo, who killed Eric Garner, he had lots of complaints that he had done incorrect things and practiced racism, overuse of force, that type of thing. They do this sort of thing all the time. Daniel Holtzclaw, same thing. Lots of reports that he had sexually terrorized lots of black females. So if you keep having these incidents, that'll make your insurance go up, so it will price you out of being able to be a police officer. You won't be able to afford it. I've heard lots of different strategies like that, and it's exactly what you said. You know, you'd still have to get rid of the system of white supremacy. They said number one, I think it was that one, and it was one other prominent one, the immunity, so that enforcement officers can't be sued, getting that adjusted and making it so that it's easier for citizens to sue officers for wrongdoing. I think that was another one. But for all of these changes, I think they said that the police unions, they would also have to be on board for these changes, and thus far they absolutely have not been. And it seems that President Trump probably wouldn't be either, so it seems it would be really challenging, probably in many instances, most cases, to get these types of changes done. And I mean, within a system of white supremacy, that would mean like having, so like, let's take your, like with the licensing. So that would mean that you would have to have like an enforcement apparatus like set up. So like when these incidents happen, it's not going to be that we do a review and, you know, it was unfounded. The complaint was unfounded, so, you know, that doesn't, like, it would have to be something where these complaints come in, and boom, this impacts your licensing status. It's not just going to be the same old, where people make reports of wrongdoing, and unfounded, or, you know, inconclusive, and it just goes on. Like, it would have to be something where there's a report of wrongdoing, and that has an impact on the light. Like, you get five of these, and boop, you know, this happens. And, you know, as I said, like, there's a enforcement apparatus that is consistent, and logically equates the wrongdoing, is logically weighted with the wrongdoing. And it would be really difficult for me to see that sort of any, like with any of them. Like, I think any of those could work, right, if they implemented them, like the insurance. If you made the officers pay for it, you go out and you keep getting all these complaints and such, and your insurance goes through the roof, now you can't afford to be a police officer. That could work, you know, if it was enforced and what have you. The licensing, that could work, you know, if they enforce the same principle. All of these strategies could work if there were white people who were really serious, committed, we are going to end the system of white supremacy, and this is what it's going to look like in all areas of people activity. Bam, this is what it looks like. Like, yeah, that could, but I seriously doubt that. Like, the mayor in Minnesota, a white man, said that he wouldn't support the defunding. Not that I think that would be an improvement. Like, the president has come out so staunchly against this. I don't see most white people even getting behind, you know, the defunding or anything. Well, I just can't fathom that. Like, all it would take is one, anything, 9/11, anything to kind of jar people a little bit. Get out of that craziness. More guns, more guns, more guns. So, yeah, it's hard for me to believe that white people would seriously get behind any of that, and particularly for a long period of time, and particularly not with this president. So it could work if white people were serious about ending racism, but they're not. So you can just put that on the pile with the rest of the audience, basically. Let's see. Other folks, if you have thoughts on any of the other strategies that they have proposed about ending this problem, if you have participated in any of the marches, protests, whatever, the unruly street activity, feel free to share, especially if any of our Seattle folks, if you are listening in and have observed, because it was frightening. Like I said, I don't know other folks' experience. Maybe they're accustomed to seeing, you know, glass shattered everywhere and enforcement officials roaming about, being vigilant, kind of prowling the area, and all the, like I said, just the feeling that anything bad could happen at any moment. I am not accustomed to having that sensation when I'm out and about, but that is what it felt like walking through Seattle on a Monday morning, again, not at night, 2 o'clock in the morning. No, broad daylight, Monday morning. Wow. Like, incredible. I've not witnessed anything like it directly, even though I will say the Super Bowl, when they won the Super Bowl in 2000, whatever year that was, 2013, talk about unruly street activity. Absolutely. They were letting off firearms and all the rest of it, so that's pretty dangerous too. But and that was a lot of people, like, total, and alcohol, so yeah, that was dangerous for many, many reasons. But this, wow. And I cannot emphasize enough, I so wish I had taken a picture, but it was just not like, I mean, it just was not an environment to stand and gawk. I didn't feel like gawking. I wanted to, you know, make haste. Like, let's get where we're going. Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here. But I wish I had taken a picture of the jewelry store and maybe the pictures of the dead black people, because that also was right there with the jewelry store heist. Just to, for me, just seeing, I mean, they can call them shrines or whatever. And particularly, like, these are where there are super expensive condominiums, like in the middle of Seattle's Capitol Hill, which is the LGBTQI district. And this is where they're protesting and running amok in the streets. Last night, they had barricaded the police station here so the protesters couldn't come and break the police windows and, I don't know, do whatever else. But they removed the barricades at the police station yesterday, and they went out and shouted and formed a big, you know, mass in front of the police department. Social distancing again. Lots of reasons why unruliness. Ain't no logic in the streets. But they went and did that yesterday. And I think someone came out to talk to them about de-escalation and what the police were doing, like, in the midst, as I said, of, you know, really expensive condominiums, white-owned condominiums, and then they have the audacity to go and put some tacky decorations. We'll hang, you know, Tamir Rice, picture of him. We miss you, Tamir. We're doing this for you, Tamir. Like, tacky, man. White people have clowned really hard all week long. They have clowned really hard here in Seattle. It has rained all day today. I guess I'll add that too, since it's supposed to be summertime, allegedly, or at least right close to summertime. I'm not sure if the temperature got above 60 degrees today in Seattle. It's been cloudy and rainy all day long, and the only bit of glee that I had in the rain is that I used the Color Purple line. I'm so glad it's raining on the protesters' head. Like, I hope they get soggy and wet. Not for the victims of racism, but again, I don't know about where you all are, but here it is a lot of white people. I posted the image that I was talking about in Minnesota. That also is a lot of white people. I know there are black people, non-white people out protesting, and hope they're safe and, you know, use logic, stay safe and use logic. But yeah, just that alone, like the presence of a lot of individuals that I suspect are racist. Why are you here? Is this the most constructive way that you could work to replace white supremacy? Like, really? This is the most you could do? Come out here and cause a ruckus in the street for 20 minutes or 2 weeks. That's the most you could do. Break a few windows. Loot a jewelry store. All right. Anywho, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We should be here tomorrow for final book session on Dr. Layla Africa, the nutritional destruction of black people all over. We'll wrap things up. I'm so thankful. We will celebrate Jubilee tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And I believe Dr. Martin Kevorkian might be making a visit back to the program. Have to double check to be sure. But his name was mentioned, so I thought I would see if we could get him back. Have to double check to see if we can get him on the schedule. But I told him if he's able to come back, the films I wanted to look at, kind of in step with what's happening now. The Hate U Give, that was one. Breaking 2, The Electric Boogaloo, also on the list because that keeps being mentioned with the Boogaloo Boys, the folks that are going out and trying to bring, or not trying, going out and bringing their own firearms, saying we're here to practice racism, white supremacy. Boogaloo Boys. Those are two. Hate U Give, because that book is being recommended a lot. Well, I guess the book and film are being recommended frequently right now, like on mainstream New York Times and all that. Like, do you want to talk to your children about what's happening with George Floyd? These books or this film will help. And it's right at the top of the list. So, book club, Gals Book Club. Caller 3388. Did you have commentary, questions, thoughts to share?
Yes, sir. Gus, can I be here?
Yes, sir.
Hey, caller from Alabama Railroader. Been a while since I've been able to catch you live, Gus, man. But I sent you a link to a podcast on Messenger about John Bowen. I stumbled across this scene on radio, Seeing Whiteness. It's some white people interviewing other white people, and they talking about whiteness, the whole creation of the whole thing. Pretty interesting. I thought maybe you might want to look at that if you hadn't already. It's old. It's a thing from 2017, but for some reason, I stumbled on that. But just from the things going on, the more I understand, the more I realize that this system that we in is going to only end if white people want it to end. So in a lot of ways, I understand what Mr. Fuller, what he's saying. I mean, it doesn't really matter how we shape this thing. If white people don't want to get on board to make this thing happen, then we just get another form of the same, the same treatment. So, and I guess understanding that helps me mentally try to, tamper down my expectations. So that kind of helps my sanity. Then at the same time, it's like the more you realize, the more frustrated you get, because you're like, hey, like we doing all this other stuff that really don't matter if white people don't want it to end. I mean, they gotta want it in. And you know, I'm glad. I appreciate you shedding light and helping me understand what's going on and helping me look at things a different way. And you know, but damn, man, it's frustrating. And I can't lie, it's frustrating, bro. And I mute myself. That's all I wanted to share.
Tell me about it, man. It is super frustrating, and particularly as you start to understand if that's true. And I mean, for me, it's a conclusion. It is. As long as white people are dedicated to the system of racism, white supremacy, and that's what we have, system of white supremacy, it really doesn't matter. Defund the police. Take away their licenses. Take away the bond. Heard that one too. Take away their bond. It really doesn't matter. We will still get more or less the same result. Little less here, little more there, but still system of racism, white supremacy. Until you really start to grasp that and understand why that is that true? Okay. I even thought, hey, we are in the 21st century. Black Mirror, Dr. Kevorkian, we did talk about Black Mirror. They do have an episode. You don't have police. You have dogs. Robotized dogs that do the enforcement. And that is happening on the planet right now. I think I got the country wrong, but it's happening in Singapore, where they had dogs that were doing the enforcement of the quarantine to make people stay inside and take COVID-19 seriously. So, I mean, it's a whole lot of possibilities. None of them would be an improvement, in my view, if we still have the system of white supremacy. Again, you know, it is not pretty, but we want to be honest. We don't want to lie to ourselves about that. You know, super important. Being truthful, Mr. Fuller emphasizes that. Dr. Welsing emphasizes that. She said that's the job of the psychiatrist, is to help the patient be honest, even when they are, be honest with themselves, face truth, even when they are afraid to do so. Very important. And I think, again, white people are most to blame. They do a lot to confuse us. Like, you got Nancy Pelosi out with the kente cloth and all that, and thinking, oh wow, they're really behind this, and we're going to make change, and you know, it's going to be better and all. I mean, they can Mitt Romney was at the march yesterday. Like, they can really get you. They can get you in so many different ways to have you confounded about what is happening and the word use and all the rest of it. Like, it can be they make it very challenging to grasp, like, what the totality of what this is, you know, like, yeah. But replacing white supremacy with justice, not piecemeal changes, that's not going to do it. Defunding the police department, I don't think it's going to do it. Could be wrong. Seattle has been super scary. Like, wow. Don't want to be around the downtown area. If you are coming to the Seattle area, I can't imagine too many people traveling, but if you're coming to the Seattle area, I would probably try to steer clear of downtown, particularly in the evening. If you got to go, it should be like quick, super strategic, like, we are going here. And I would even pre-check, because so many places, like, they have weird hours. Like I said, a lot of the places were closed, or either they had really bizarre hours. Like, I saw, I think it was some sort of confectionery, and they had, I think, hours they were like from Thursday to Saturday from 12 noon to 6. Like, very peculiar hour. Like, I don't know if that's Rona related, if that's riot related, a little bit of both, but yeah, I've never seen anything like it. It was absolutely terrifying being there. I thought, you know, I could be ambushed at any moment. And I wish I had photographs of the looted jewelry store to confirm this is not, you know, some folks who are frustrated and, you know, we're going to work together. No, this is mechanical equipment had to be brought in to get this done. Anywho, definitely feel you, caller in Alabama, on the frustration, and you just try to use logic as best you can and not allow the emotions to get the best of you, but it is super frustrating grasping. I know I spoke with Mr. Fuller about that, Dr. Welsing as well, and they would both just kind of, keep the nose to the grindstone and doing constructive work. And certainly there's so many things to do now, like it's not even enough time to sit around and be frustrated or sad or disappointed or anything, just because it's so much ongoing chaos. You don't even really have time to do that, but just trying to use logic, just emphasize that. Use logic. There's very little logic in the streets that is encouraged by race soldiers. They know if you're out yelling and chanting and doing all that, you're probably not going to be doing some processing and thinking, evaluating, what are the best decisions that I should be making? What is this? If I do this, like, you know, what am I going to think about this decision in 6 months? Is this going to, more importantly, what we're doing now, is this going to have solved the problem? Like a year from now, we're going to be like, wow, like, man, we went out there and we're jumping up and down in the streets like that. That's what did it, man. That's how we got this solved. Is that what it's going to be? Or are we going to have to come out and do this again in like 7 months or 7 days? We'll give folks, if they have any other questions, suggestions that they want to get in. Oh, I said tomorrow. Today is Tuesday. So we'll be here for the book club on Thursday, not tomorrow. Thursday we'll be here for the book club. Whew, I am so excited. And Dr. Kevorkian, we'll see if we have him on the program. See if we can get some other folks. We should have our Global Sunday Talk next weekend. So looking forward to checking in with folks overseas. I spoke with Marquise Treve as well in Brazil. Like, wow, they are having the exact same thing. Totally not related to George Floyd. They kill lots of black people in Brazil all the time. And the police killed some black people over the past couple of days. COVID-19 has killed more black people there than anywhere in the world except the United States. And also they had a young child who just died, like when I say young, like five, who died this week from a negligent suspected race soldier who was not paying. And this is a COVID-19 and white supremacy death, this five-year-old child. But Mr. Marquise Treve, he was just with us on the program a couple weeks back, and he wrote about this. He was writing about the other police terrorism in Brazil in the midst of the coronavirus situation, which is, you know, as number two in the world with cases now, in the midst of all of that. But they are protesting what's happening there and Black Lives Matter. I don't know how you say it in Portuguese, but they're doing all that down there related to what's been happening the last few days. So it's been totally crazy. The entire hemisphere right now. I'm going to see if we can get him back on the program and, you know, talking to some of the other folks who are down in South America about what is happening. Both with the COVID-19 situation, because I think that is hugely important. I think folks that, you know, pay attention to racism, white supremacy, that's how we should be thinking about COVID-19 as a hemisphere. This hemisphere, the two locations, you, the world, but this hemisphere, Brazil, United States, black people being hammered with COVID-19 cases, unless, you know, folks think that they're lying on two continents and that you got a lot of black people fooled where they think this is happening, black medical professionals where they think this is happening on those two areas and are taking it serious. That's what, you know, how folks should be processing what's happening. I think it's hugely important and really paying attention to what's happening in Brazil right now. It is exactly what is taking place right here in the United States, and they have even more black people. So, and the police kill way more black people. I was reminded Harriet A. Washington has that statistic in A Terrible Thing to Waste. Brazil, the police kill about 5,000 people per year in Brazil. We're nowhere near that here in the U.S., but 5,000 per year. They repeated that statistic on NPR this week when they were talking about everything that's happening down there. But pay attention. It is a global system of white supremacy, racism. That's one thing that we can do, study while we have this time and all the rest of it. If we're in the house, we can be studying. That is one thing. If you want to take a little break, study what is happening in Brazil right now. That is major black people. I mean, just lots and lots of the same things. Black people being mistreated. If we're trying to study and be concerned about the plight condition of black people as victims, be paying attention to Brazil for sure. Any other folks comments, suggestions, questions they want to make sure they get in, number is 605-313-5164, the code 564-943 pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Any other folks, comments, suggestions they want to make sure they get in?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida, thanks for our sound check, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to the guests, the hosts, the listeners, and callers. I do agree with the point of frustration from the reports that are being shown. I am seeing just small, examples of Black people, catching white people, so to speak, on trying to get Black people to throw bricks and things like that. Like, there was one where a Black female said, "Hey, you know, what are you doing out here trying to give a Black male a brick? Are you crazy?" It was a whole sedan, like a vehicle of, I just saw like pale skin tone. So I assumed that it was some white people. So I can only imagine how much, things like that are going on. And, you know, Black people, having some sense of codification, but it doesn't seem like that's getting any, of course, that's not going to get any mainstream, what they call mainstream media attention. But definitely I could see them, steering or misdirecting it somewhat from racism, especially when they're using the term dismantle and defunding the police departments and things like that. And I'm also seeing where they're saying, "Oh, well, when we say defunding, you know, we're not saying we don't want to, we're not saying we don't want to break down or take away the police. We just want to divert it to other causes and social causes." And that gets into definitely a lot of confusion, because, wait a minute, we're supposed to be talking about racists, all right? And I think, to a degree, in my opinion, there are, I think, some Black people, I don't know if I could say the majority, when it comes to the less confused, when they're calling out the white people that's there, like, "Hey, what are you doing to contribute to the racism?" I think you mentioned a point like that, like, this is the best you can do, come out here and cause destruction. And then to have Black people get blamed for it, like, I've seen where, you know, a Black person said, "Hey, why are you writing BLM on a building?" Black people are going to get blamed for that. But they're still able to cause damage. Even though a Black person called that one white person out, they're still able to cause confusion. Like, I'm seeing kneeling and prayer, and they're having Black people crying and utilizing our emotions against us. But definitely I can see where they're trying to, I guess, use the defunding word in the approach with the protest. So I think it's interesting to see where it's going to head. And then, of course, they got the president, I guess, trying to say something. I don't know if you heard about it. They said that it was something about him making a conspiracy about, it looked like that was a white person that was pushed by law enforcement or whatever. And, you know, just all kind of nonsense they're putting out there, which could definitely be racism as well. But there's a humongous, I'm sure you probably know about this, guys, humongous Confederate flag down in the Brandon, Tampa area. I mean, that flag is so massive. I think it's like 50 feet. Like, they want to make sure you see that. You on I-75. I mean, it's huge. So they got all of these statues and monuments coming out. That could lead to some confusion as well, because I think you said you'd rather have it, those monuments kind of stay up to definitely be more of a direct reminder of white supremacy. You know, I definitely agree with that because they're having white people not even get accepted to University of Florida and other campuses and stuff, and they're looking up racist posts and stuff. So it's causing all kinds of, you know, reactions to different acts of racism. So those are the reports that I'm kind of getting knowledge of. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Confusion is lethal. Man. Wow. The black people being blamed, absolutely. I was thinking that too when I went downtown, even though it's been lots of white people out in the street in Seattle and elsewhere. But yeah, like BLM is spray painted on all these buildings and all the rest of it. And actually, as you said, black people will be blamed. And the deceptive, I think we had a caller on the compensatory call in this past weekend. He said that Dr. Gerald Horn, black male, we read his book. He did an interview and they were talking about previous protests in other cities where it looked like just suspicious things, where like a pile of rocks was set up and just those type of things. You got some white chick out, hey brother, right on man, here's a brick, down with the establishment, you know, like that sort of thing. Like what? And that's what I mean too, like I gotta be ducking and dodging all this. Like, is she giving out bricks that have been contaminated with the Rona? Is she just trying to get, you know, incite a riot? Like, if I don't throw the brick, is she going to do it? And then when they turn around, who's throwing bricks? And I'm the only idiot out here with a brick. I mean, it's so much, just, it's so many opportunities for what I can, anything to happen. Anything meaning something bad, something not constructive, probably even something destructive, somebody being harmed. Is too many opportunities for that to happen. You got so many people there. You don't know these people. They're strangers. It's not like you all, you know, coordinated this. It's not like everybody met at a church or the YMCA at the basketball gym and decided we're going to go down and protest about all this and coordinated, you know, what we're going to do, or which, I mean, that's not the case. It's a recipe for confusion. And confusion in a myriad of ways. Now, I haven't seen the flag in Tampa, Confederate flag, but they have one in Virginia. I saw it on the way out from the yoga retreat. They have one there. I didn't get to measure it, but looks like it's considerably longer than 20 feet. So it looks pretty big. Same thing. They want you to see it. Don't miss it. We're proud. System of white supremacy.
They got one in Alabama too.
I'm not surprised. They probably got one here in Washington State and North Carolina. Lots of locations, lots and lots of places for the flag. I'm sure all over South Carolina will get non-Clemson grad on maybe, but yeah, they're proud. Now, I don't know if they're going to, I can't imagine, because I haven't seen, if you can't even take down the statue of Robert E. Lee, I know that 50-foot flag is not coming down anytime soon. And even if it does, what about all the smaller ones? I've seen some white people, they got the statues on their lawn, and all the rest of it. We said for a long time, what about Jacksonville, the city? Like, are they going to rename that? Like, come on, man. The accoutrement of white supremacy racism are countless, global. It would take an exhausting amount of time and energy from many, many people all over the world, many, many people and lots of equipment to remove, sanitize the planet of all the racist paraphernalia. So in the meantime, I think it'd probably be easier once we get a system of justice. I think I say what he said, leaving it up for a reminder, I think is the best bet. That's what we're trying to eradicate. System of white supremacy. Until then, because a lot of us get confused, we want to make sure we're keeping down confusion as much as possible about what is happening, who is most to blame for what is happening, who is in charge, what the problem is. Racism, white supremacy, white people. Ain't no logic in the streets. Any other folks, suggestions, questions they want to get in?
Can I be heard?
Henry in Chicago. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know you were also talking about the monuments and the tearing down the Confederate monuments. And you also mentioned about why nobody, I agree, why nobody is making a big deal about changing the FBI building from the from J. Edgar Hoover, who was at one point the chief race soldier of the country. But I'm also wondering, too, why nobody is making a big, and I don't know, I might be wrong on this, but is anybody making a big thing about changing the name of the Edmund Pettus Bridge? Because I know that's a very popular thing with Selma and everything. And, you know, everybody knows, well, not everybody, but, you know, most of us know that Edmund Pettus was a Confederate, general. So I wonder why nobody's making a big thing out of that, either. So I just want to put that out there. I mean, my mind.
Thank you, because absolutely, I don't think everybody knows that Edmund Pettus was a KKK member. I know I didn't know that until about 2015 or so. My understanding, or at least I haven't heard anything about that this week, and I'm saying that pretty confidently because when they started all the hubbub about, let's go topple Robert E. Lee's statue and some of the other racists, and sometimes they got slave traders too, their statues. And I said, I don't think this is constructive, and some of the Cows listeners were like, what? What are you talking about, Gus? You're crazy. You got to love this. You got to want to see this. So I think it's super logical to go after white supremacy symbols. And I said exactly that. I said, well, one is so many of them. I just get exhausted. Like, are we going to have to go and take down all these Confederate flags? Like, if it's 50 feet, man, you might need, I don't think Bree Newsom is going to be able to do that by herself. We might need, quite a few people to get that down. And then we got to go get, what about the one in Virginia and Alabama? And I mean, it's a lot of these statues, like, wow. And even beyond, like I said, Jacksonville, and it's so much. And the Edmund Pettus Bridge, like, man, like, we got to rename that or take it down or what? I just get exhausted. And the money, I get exhausted. It's a lot of white supremacy symbols. And I mentioned the Edmund Pettus Bridge because I said, yeah, I haven't heard any protests at the bridge. Like, I haven't seen anybody in Alabama. They're at the Edmund Pettus Bridge every day, and they're chanting no justice, no peace, and the Edmund Pettus must go, and new name, we're going to call it the Breonna Taylor Bridge or something. Like, I haven't heard any of that. And there was an effort repeatedly over the years. There have been, I guess, numerous efforts in Alabama to get that bridge chanted. Even the deliberateness, because I didn't know all this until about 2015 when I wrote about the folly of taking down Confederate monuments after the Dillon Storm roof shooting. That's why I say we keep doing the same thing, motivated by white people to keep doing the same nonsensical things. But they deliberately named this bridge the Edmund Pettus Bridge as a signal of their dedication to white supremacy, so that as you come in, Edmund Pettus, like, ah, yes, bastion of white supremacy. Like, wow, you needed another signifier on top of everything. Like, okay. But they've had a number of efforts to change the name of that bridge over the years, and obviously they've all failed because it's still named. And I think they've all failed pretty easily. Like, I don't think they've even been close to getting it changed, which, again, that just goes back to the point about the licensing or removing the licensing for a police officer, or making them pay for their own insurance, or removing the bond of a police department, or whatever it is. As long as white people are dedicated to practicing racism, white supremacy, the name of the Edmund Pettus Bridge will not change. The shoddy and terroristic treatment that black people receive from enforcement officials will not change. We'll just get more of the same. Change without improvement. Some days they do all this wearing kente cloth. Some days they come out in a tuxedo or a black dress. It just depends. Let's see. Other folks, any other questions, suggestions, observations? Grant. We will be here, not tomorrow. I kept thinking today was Wednesday for some reason. We will be here on Thursday for the book club, All Done, Nutritional Destruction of Black People. Looking forward, so thankful, so thankful. We will update the Black Talk Radio Network page. I'm trying to go back and get more of the archives uploaded. We did so much. There have been so many disturbances over the years. I'm trying to go back and make sure I upload some of the content so that folks can hear some of the earlier broadcasts where we have talked about these type of disturbances and what generally happens. White people have pretty good scripts to follow about how to neutralize protests, riots about white supremacy, racism. But we'll try to update the COWS archives and be uploading some of the older, when I say older, like 2015, 2014, that type of thing, 2013. Uploading some of the older content, making sure that is accessible. If you have other questions, feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. Much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your time and energy. We don't have time, resources to waste in 2020. It has been such a horrible year. Man, conserve your time and energy. Super important. That's what mature attempted counter-racist scientists, I think that's something that we should work at getting better at, improving our use of time and energy. Again, much obliged to everyone. Thanks for their participation. Hope it was worthy of a Tuesday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy is so much, man. If I had stumbled into downtown and not been thinking correctly, like, wow, I don't even want to ponder. Like, it's so dangerous and unpredictable and unruly outside right now, all around the world, for so many reasons. You want that brain computer operating at maximum efficiency. You do not want to be disturbed or just not able to process information or to be a little slow in processing information. That could be a dangerous mistake given what's taking place now. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled. If you are going out and about, I mean, they somewhat relaxed restrictions here in the Seattle area and a lot of other places, but not totally. And the virus is still a problem, they say, along with white supremacy, racism, armed race soldiers, some with badges, some without. I mean, man, it's lots and lots of reasons to be concerned about being out in the general population right about now. I would try to stay in the house. If you got to go out, you know, for work or something essential, you know, get what you need to get. But it would be strategic, and I would be alert if it looks like anything could be awry, unsafe. I'm good. We'll scrap this and try again later. I just wouldn't take any chances. If I was by myself or if I had offspring, I just wouldn't be about chance taking right now. Be real risk averse in the system of white supremacy for the next few days or so. Just a suggestion. Buckled, sober, if you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. No reasons. We want to try as much as we can minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's what he says. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. COWS signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
You're a victim. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.